Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, with a well, we call that a scruff? Would we call that a beard? Will we call that a Harrison Ford? What's happening there, Cameron?
Forgetting to shave. Yeah, we'll just say that. I mean, crazy busy week, so I have not even had time to stand in front of a mirror and shave. So we're getting the 5 o'clock shadow.
Okay. Okay. Well, hey, dude, you know, it's going to be useful in case you need to light a match, anything like that. You're ready to go, you know? Hey, we're a day tardy again. I don't want to say it's entirely your fault, but it essentially is.
Yes.
And we're just going to move forward and just lay all the blame on you. I'm glad we agree on that. And now we're going to talk about what's going on this week. So we're going to open the show talking about Ixalan in terms of the pre-release. I'll give my kind of early impressions. And then middle segment, we're going to talk about new standard, which might be actually a lot like the old standard. We're going to talk about some new rules. And then we're going to close the show talking about Star Trek. And maybe some other
pop culture stuff, right? Yeah.
Things that may or may not be Destiny 2. We'll see. Anyway, it's amazing how hooked in I can get to a good online game, Cameron. Can we talk?
Yeah, man, right?
Yeah. So pre-release, as you previously mentioned, you are did not get a chance to play any this week, right?
An awful podcast host for Magic the Gathering. I am. Yes, I have not played.
Can I tell you something? I think this was a good week not to play. I feel
really?
Like both you and I
was jonesing so bad. Like, I felt so bad that I wasn't pre-releasing.
Well, every once in a while, and look, I know listeners are going to be like, oh, podcaster problems. But look, I feel like after we've completed however many consecutive weeks of the show, we can talk about this. Like, you do feel a certain pressure to play. And like last week, I wanted to give myself that break. And I think every once in a while, it's good, especially whenever you're on the precipice of a new format. You kind of want to approach it with clean eyes, like kind of get all the detritus of that previous format out of your head. Because a lot of times I carry bad habits, or maybe not necessarily bad, but the same habits over. And I need to kind of just clear out and get my reps in. That especially happens with Limited. Like if we go to from a fast format to a slow format, like I just spend the first 2 weeks losing horribly because my brain isn't good enough to adjust. What do you know about Ixalan though, Cameron?
There are pirates. I believe there are dinosaurs, merfolk, and I honestly don't know a single thing as far as like the speed. How fast this limited format is, you know, what are the color preferences, all of that. I've kind of just stayed very clear. I'll be jumping into Ixalan probably this week and then, you know, draft to my heart's content, or I guess sealed to my heart's content. So,
but of course, you have all the lore memorized.
Oh, of course. I mean,
of course.
Who doesn't?
Well, here's the thing. I sat down to it, again, after like 10 days off of not playing cards, just like taking a nice little break. I had a very busy weekend, but I actually happened to have Monday off because my daughter wasn't in school. My daughter's in upper elementary, so she's very capable of kind of, I just have to be at the house with her. You know what I mean? Like, but anyway, so we pop on, or I pop on to Ixalan as soon as it launches online. And I've just done a sealed and I haven't finished it. I finished, because it's one of those where you do three, add a pack, do three matches, add a pack.
Cool.
So I finished six matches. I'm getting ready to go through the three. I didn't know how to feel about it at first because it is a very strange vibe. Again, there are pirates, there are dinosaurs, there are merfolk, and there are vampires. And it's like, did you put this all in a blender and see what came out? Like, how did that happen? It's such a weird series of conclusions to come to. But I have to admit, it does have its own personality. And whenever you open your sealed pool, your first initial reaction will be, well, this is a mess. I got some merfolk in green, but then there's also some dinosaurs in green, and then I have some blue merfolk, it's a pirates, but it's not as tribally centric as something like Lorwyn.
Okay.
Meaning that some of the tribal synergy, like you just get like a bonus, like there's a 2-mana 2/1, and if you control another merfolk, it flies. Perfectly serviceable as a 2-1. for two mana. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's not as extensive where it's like, oh, you got to champion a fairy, otherwise this thing doesn't work. It's not to that level. And so you just kind of end up with a bunch of different creature types that has some incidental synergy. And I know a lot of people have really been bothered by this, but can I tell you a secret? That happens every set.
Uh-huh.
All the creatures have different types. They're not all the same type every time. That's a thing. Like, if you look at Origins, there's a different creature types in the decks. Anyway, I'm just saying, that's a thing. But there's, you just have to get past this kind of weirdness of, so the pirates are Grixis color, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The merfolk are blue and green. The vampires are white. And then the dinosaurs are Naya. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. Some stuff is missing in there, right?
Yeah.
The way
it's
slicing up the pie doesn't seem correct. And I got to be honest with you, the vampire stuff didn't seem like it mattered at all. I never stumbled upon any opponent, never saw any vampire synergy. It was just kind of like, oh, this guy happens to be a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, it ends up feeling like there's a big deck full of beef in the dinosaur decks. And then I had a blue deck. And more on that in a second. And I was playing more of a control role. So if I managed the board properly, I had a great long game.
Mm-hmm.
But if I didn't and they got out ahead, I'd lost. So I actually kind of liked it so far. I mean, this is all caught one huge caveat. Six games. And Cameron, can we talk about a seal pool?
Please.
The most ridiculous seal pool I maybe have ever opened. Like I'm 4-2. I should genuinely be 6-0.
Okay.
I am not doing this pool any service. Like I tweeted to you a picture. I have both the mana drain and the mind control variants from the set. One time I countered something and got 6 lotus petals. And I cast 4 spells the next turn. It is ridiculous. One of the weird things, though, is a bunch of the mana ramp is in blue because the pirates create treasure tokens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones creating the lotus petals. So my deck is mostly blue, but it's actually 4 colors.
That's awesome.
Right? Because of all this weird pirate synergy. And I'm glad you're sitting down for this. The merfolk stuff doesn't bother me.
That seems wrong.
Yeah, because, I mean, just to put a bow on this, I hate Merfolk as a constructed deck. I hated it as a standard deck. I think it leads to these really redundant play patterns.
What do you mean? You play a Merfolk and you attack. I mean,
Lord, attack you for 16. It's actually 15, 18? Man, but whatever, whatever. But no, like, it's kind of a side synergy, and I would suspect vampires are the same thing, whereas dinosaurs and pirates are, like, right up in your grill.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, I've had a good time. I would suspect it's going to draft a lot differently, because then you can hone in on, okay, I am drafting exclusively dinosaurs here, or
sure,
whatever. And some people really don't like the kind of stay-in-your-lane style drafting. I tend to get a pretty good charge out of that because, you know, I might draft once a week. I don't get to draft 4 times a week. But Cameron, I think you're going to like it.
It seems straightforward. Like, it just seems like really good, straightforward Magic, which to me makes, we've had this conversation before, but it seems like that makes for like the best type of draft format for me. I mean, I'm sure if I played it 300 times, I would get really sick of it, but just, you know, giving it on first blush, it looks great.
Well, and some of the nuances are a lot of fun, like the flipped enchantments that become lands.
Those are amazing.
You know, that's something that's new, but it feels very fresh, but it also feels like something that could have happened in Magic years past. Like, now, there's a lot to like here. So, Limited, that's very, very early impressions, but I actually give it a thumbs up. I'm also a big fan of Lotus Petals. Like, so, you know, this is the set for me.
It's surprising. I mean, Lotus, I mean, what do they really do? I mean, they just sit there and...
Was it last episode you were like, yeah, but what would you honestly do with 5 lotus petals? You're lucky I wasn't there in person to just like open hand slap you across the face. Get it together, man, is what I would have said. Anyway, Cameron, we're gonna because there's not a ton going on this week, we're gonna kind of focus in on Ixalan. We're gonna come back and talk about new standard and new modern. We'll be right back after this. This week, we'd like to thank some of our patrons, James Bodiger, Eric Ian Heaviside, and David Carver. Thank you guys so much for helping to support the show. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click the donate button. Thank you. All right, Cameron. So, relatively quick show today. And by quick show, I mean quick on Magic content. So you can talk for 30 minutes about Star Trek. We got a new standard. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ixalan's coming in. We're having Shadows go away in Battle for Zendikar. This feels like the first time in like 5 years that we haven't had Gideon ally of Zendikar, right?
It's true. I mean, I know he's only been around for 2 years, but it feels like a very long time with Gideon, right?
He's like, you know, that roommate's girlfriend that you hated. And like, you thought that they were together for like so many months because you just couldn't stand everything that she would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was so obnoxious. She was always like showing up with her Aerosmith t-shirt and so forth. And you just found her really like an annoying and not a good fit. And they only dated for like 2 weeks, but in your head it was like 6 months.
It felt like an eternity. Yeah.
It felt like forever. Mm-hmm. That's Gideon ally of Zendikar, you know? And if we could just be honest, it's obvious that Gideon likes Aerosmith. Like, why else would he have that hair, right?
Yeah, you make a fair point. I can't argue against that. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so Cameron, mm-hmm. off the top of your head, standard decks that you think will exist after rotation. Go.
With Lotus Petals that are existing in this, a mechanized production deck. Like, I'm brewing so much right now, and like the thing that I'm like so excited for is just like that one bad deck that I'm actually going to try to play, and it will be awful, but I don't care. I get to live the dream for at least 1 week.
Tell me what that deck is.
Okay, so this is a deck that is all about artifacts, and mechanized production is the one that you enchant an artifact you control, and then at the beginning of your upkeep, you create a token of that artifact, okay? And then if you control 8 or more artifacts with the same name as one another, you win the game. So if you have like 7 of those Lotus Petals, you copy one, next upkeep, you win. See how it's the new Second Sun deck. We'll just say that.
Cameron, what's the name of the show?
Once again, slap, right? No.
I mean, does this deck also include Tezzeret? Are you on the Tezzeret bandwagon as well?
Absolutely, man. Yeah. No, in all reality, like, I am super stoked, like, super, super stoked to play Blue-White Control. There's just so many really cool, fun tools that exist. This standard that, like, I'm just, like, gung-ho for it. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of tweaks and refinement in the next couple of weeks here. But day one, when this new standard is starting, I'm suiting up some sort of blue-white control deck, probably a Second Sun Gear Hulk deck. But that's the one that's got me like all jazzed right now.
Dude, you and Torrential Gear Hulk have been in this flirtatious relationship for a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can we just get this out in the open? Like, every time you're like, man, if I could just play a deck with Torrential Gear Hulk, that would be swell. And I'm like, dude, buy your Torrential Gear Hulks. It's fine, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's true. I miss that bandwagon, and I regret it every single day,
dude. And plus, you have to live the dream of Torrential Gear Hulk spell swindle, and then cast another Gear Hulk. Come on.
Yeah. That would just, that is the dream. I mean, that's like hard casting an Emrakul, right? I mean, when you get there, it's just going to feel so good. It's awesome.
I think it would be better than that. I mean, you might have to have, like, emergency services called as soon as that happens. Like, your body could go into shock, Cameron.
They have a defibrillator on hand just to, like...
I mean, God, the value, Cameron. The value. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so interesting, and I just want to get your opinion. Will you play black in this deck? Will it be Esper so you can play Scarab God, or do you think that's not a thing for you?
No, I think that's variation. Totally a reality. Totally a reality. But right now, blue-white, just with like the mana base and all these other things, I feel like it's just a slightly more tuned. It's just closer to what I think is like one of the better control decks right now. So we'll start with that. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people splashing black, or you know, or even fully using black to go Esper, and or maybe even it's going to be Esper, but we'll see.
Yeah, and those mana bases have to get determined now with the check lands or whatever you want to call them.
For sure,
how that impacts mana bases that are shards essentially like Esper. You know, in the old days, it was quite good for them. So we'll see, because like, you know, Naya, you know, you have two sets of those lands to kind of go together and play nice. So a couple other decks I want to talk about. Like, everybody's kind of got their sights set on Rug Energy, as do I. I'm still on the Regisaur Alpha, the one more mana Bloodbraid Elf, as I like to refer to him. I still like, and his price has gone up. I don't know if you follow this, but now he's like selling at like $10. But I think what happened is a lot of people played him at the pre-release and were like, "Oh wait, it gives the token haste." Oh yeah, it does. Oh okay. Wait, what? Wow, this is really good. Like it was one of those.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking to incorporate that dinosaur into my deck. So that's what I'm going to be playing. But here's some other ones that are just floating around out there. Okay. Green black energy, like Winding Constrictor energy, basically untouched. That deck is still going to be around. It loses Nissa. Okay.
Yeah.
And Grasp of Darkness, kind of. I mean, Fatal Push, like, but even those were kind of like fringy. That's not the deck, right?
Yeah.
Mardu Vehicles loses Thraben Inspector.
That's a thing. I mean, that's like a serious hit to that deck, but I think that enchantment, the one mana enchantment that we talked about last week that can flip to create another, I mean, it's not a card draw mechanic obviously, but seems like it could fit into some sort of Mardu vehicles or red white vehicles or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Heart of Kieran's just too good to do nothing.
Yep.
Like, and Veteran Motorist makes that, you like, just those two cards existing together in Standard makes me feel like it's going to be a thing. Now, here's some other stuff that's kind of on the periphery, if you will. Pharaoh's Gift. Those pieces are still there. The Pummeler deck. And some kind of version of Black-White Zombies, which I'm not convinced Zombies is going to survive this, honestly. No pun intended.
I mean, what is it missing post-rotation?
It loses...
Gideon? I guess it was... Gideon's never in it, right?
No. Just black. It was just black. Just black. So it had the Crypt Keeper, the one mana.
Okay.
And then... So it loses its one drop, one of its three drops, and it's Liliana's Mastery. Yeah, it loses some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Mastery is a big one for sure.
And, you know, a lot of people are also talking about Mono Red still being a thing. I'm not, again, very concerned about that. I know Ramunap Ruins is quite good, but you are losing all the haste creatures, basically, save like one. Like, a bunch of those are going away, and that's pretty rough for that deck. It loses a lot of tempo that way. Now, I also want to shout out to this article that we kind of are pulling from on Goldfish, MTG Goldfish. They do fantastic stuff leading to the pre-release. If you're not looking at their stuff, you totally should. But they posted an article today that kind of got me thinking. And we've talked about most of these cards. But how Ixalan fits for Modern. Now, a lot of people are saying this set is underpowered. I'm definitely not that guy. I think this deck is plenty powerful enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if you could look at this like page, Cameron. Do any of these cards stick out to you as role players in Modern?
Yes. I mean, like, you know, we talked about this, I think it was last week. Field of Ruin is still a card that I think definitely will have a place. Will it be the next Ghost Quarter? I don't think so, but I think there are certain decks that want to kind of net equal mana advantage where it seems like a likely thing to maybe side in against Tron or, you know, some of the other things that are trying to, like, maybe cheat their mana or whatever. So, or greedy mana bases of any sort. So I feel like Field of Ruin is definitely a role player. You know, Opt, I think, is going to be a thing. We didn't really talk about that in the context of Modern, but and you being the Storm player, you're going to obviously have a lot more insight into that, but it just seems like that's like a logical fit that you're going to try to put in into like your Storm deck for Modern in some way.
Yeah, I don't know if it's better than Sleight of Hand, but it being instant speed does matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, it's not going to replace Serum Visions, but I definitely think it's better than Thought Scour. Some people still play Thought Scour in their 75, so yeah, I'll definitely try it. Though I'll feel like a fraud because I didn't run out and buy the old Ops, and so I'll have to play with gross new border Opt.
Ugh.
I know, man. With this, like, dude looking through a looking glass, like, oh, cool. All right, so, by the way, not trying to just drag on the art. I'm sure the art's great, but old border, I think we can all agree, would accentuate it much better. So, Rampaging Ferocidon is how I think you see this. Say this. Is just another one of these, hey, no fun for you, guy playing against red card. It's 2 and a red for a 3/3 with menace. Players can't gain life. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, Rampaging Ferocidon deals 1 damage to that creature's controller. So, I think Modern playable, Legacy Burn does, like, definitely not needed. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, yeah. You're not doing this on turn 3. You should be very close to killing them.
One would hope.
Yeah.
I mean, what else are you doing? Now, the interesting one is Entrancing Melody, and this is one of the cards that I opened in my seal pool, and it's bonkers and limited. I would not be surprised if we see this in constructed play, honestly.
Okay.
It's a really strong effect for this casting cost. So it's X blue blue, gain control of target creature with converted mana cost X. All right?
Yeah.
Now, let's put this in the context of Modern very quickly. 3 mana, take your Delver. 3 mana, take your Death Shadow. That's okay, right?
It's very good. I mean, I'll gladly take the Death Shadow.
Yeah. The problem is mind control effects haven't been constructed playable for some time. So this represents a reduced cost version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But this one might sneak up on us. I think it's better than we might suspect, like, especially out of the side. Now, have you ever played against Threads of Disloyalty in Modern, Cameron?
Yes. I've played against the card. I can't remember which deck that's in.
It's 1 blue-blue, take control of target creature with converted mana costs 2 or less.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with it, yep.
Otherwise known as the Tarmogoyf.
Tarmogoyf target, yeah.
And that it's kind of gone in and out of Modern. I don't think it's seen play in probably a year and a half in Modern. But especially whenever you were a control deck and you were playing against a lot of Tarmogoyf decks, it was kind of a fine answer to what they were doing. But this is so much lower cost. And Modern is such an efficiency game. I don't know, man. Part of me thinks that maybe you just can't be in the market for this kind of thing, that like 3 mana, your turn 3 is too much to spend. But it seems like it would be okay.
No, I mean, if Fatal Push is really any indication, I mean, 1 and 2 casting cost creatures. There's a lot of them in Modern, and they're all really, really relevant. And I think that this totally kind of fits in that. And if we're playing a long game with like a control deck, I don't know. Like, I mean, this could be a thing. I mean, maybe it's more logical to just always Wrath. That might be the better choice. But yeah, it definitely has potential.
All right, Cameron. So last thing I want to talk about with regards to Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it should be noted that there was a bunch of stuff that's kind of trickled out about Arena since we've last talked about it. And it's
a little bit.
Okay. But it's pretty much what we think. Like, it's clearly their digital replacement for MTGO, but MTGO is going to hang on for as long as it stays profitable. So there you go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, trigger rule. So the specific example they gave was Path to Exile, but they've also talked about this in terms of Ghost Quarter. So whenever you Path to Exile something, it is now an expectation that you confirm that your opponent is turning down the search. They can't, quote, forget it by not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What's your thoughts on that rule change, Cameron?
I'm fine with this. I mean, there's never been an instance in my play experience where I haven't encouraged them to search, you know? I mean, I'm just not like the type of guy who's like, I'm not going to tell you that you can't do that. It's just like, unless I totally flat out forget, but with like modern, there's no way I'm forgetting about a Path to Exile trigger, and I'll do the same thing for my opponent. So like, cool, doesn't really affect me, but you know, and I feel like when you're in like really high level of play, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, people are going to remember. And if you're just playing like, you know, Friday Night Magic or whatever, it seems like this is a fair thing.
Yeah, I would say though, as you and I have become more and more Magic Online players over time, this is the kind of thing that we're like, yeah, of course. Of course both players have to acknowledge, because that's the way the rules work.
Sure.
Like, they just get so ingrained in you because they're automatic, you know? And I just don't like the argument when people say, oh, well, this hurts an experienced player who is trying to get a percentage point here and there. Well, maybe you should focus on other things. This is what I don't like about some of the, quote, you know, spike tactics that people try, where, you know, the no talking, looking stern, the not communicating with your opponent, the staring at them, laying your cards down, calling judge, like, and then the more extreme examples are like calling a judge at weird times just to try and rattle your opponent, like, because that's been done to me. I just think, like, sure, I understand that some people are less talkative. Like, I actually talk less when I play.
Yeah.
But you should devote your mental energy to the process of making the right decision as it relates to the gameplay. Not saying, oh man, if I can Jedi mind trick my opponent to not search for his Path to Exile, or, oh God, he's forgotten it, so act like I don't acknowledge that. Like, to me, that's just angle shooting and kind of silly. Like, be better, you know? Anyway, Cameron, are you ready to boldly go into the third segment? So, Cameron, let's just set the stage right here and now. I've seen many Star Trek movies. I don't know that I've ever watched a full Star Trek episode. Okay.
It hurts me. It hurts so bad.
And I don't I don't have like a lack of connection like I do with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Like Doctor Who, I just straight up don't get. And I've tried. But Star Trek's always just kind of been, it's there, it's hanging out. I acknowledge that it exists, but I've never dug deep. So set the stage for me, because Twitter was like a firestorm last night about Star Trek. So what happened?
Yeah, so you know, I don't know what actually happened with the
app or whatever.
The app or whatever. Apparently it wasn't working for a lot of people on Sunday night, so a lot of people didn't get their Star Trek fix. We are recording this Monday at 7 o'clock. I had just watched the first episode. It started it at 5 p.m. So like, my wife and I just downloaded the app, started it, and watched the first episode.
So fresh. So fresh.
Yeah, so it's really, really fresh. So this, it's interesting that for what a lot of people now have as a thought about Star Trek is the J.J. Abrams reboot of Star Trek that happened in, what, 2008 or 9, or I can't remember when specifically that was released. But it was the major reboot, right, where
they retconned stuff.
They went back to the Kirk era. They had a big, massive, altering thing that happened in the timeline, and a new timeline spun off from that. And that's what we have with Chris Pine and Zoe, I can't remember her name, but yeah, anyway, like the new cast of characters replaying the original cast. This is interesting, where they're not going with the Kelvin timeline, I guess that's what they're calling like this new, the new franchise of movies. This is the prime timeline. This is the one that is with the original cast, with the next generation cast theoretically, and all of that, right?
Time out. So hold on. So this show is acting like,
yeah,
the stuff in the Abrams movies didn't happen.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
So instead of retconning it and saying, okay, that old stuff doesn't count anymore, they're saying, oh no, it still counts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's true from a different point of view, is what we're basically getting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's weird because, like, we have, like, I have in my memory, very burned, ingrained in my memory, all the cheesy 1968-69 hang-ups with the original Star Trek show because of the lack of budget and it being for television of the 60s. And so, you know, Abrams rebooted that and it made it a little bit more for the 21st century audience. This is like a weird amalgam, and I don't know how I feel about it yet, where it takes place, I think, 10 or 15 years before the five-year mission of Kirk and Spock and the original crew, right? But it has like this, all the design aesthetics and everything from the Abrams universe. So it's like this weird thing that I can't quite grasp totally, but it's good in the sense of like it feels like it's more of a return to form for Star Trek. I like the Abrams universe stuff. I've enjoyed, I think we talked about the last movie that came out last year. I very much enjoyed it. But
now it's an action movie franchise.
It's an action movie, right? It doesn't feel like the humanity and this race of aliens all working together for a common goal of science and exploration. It's an action movie. This seems to be a little bit more of like a returning to form. We're returning back to Klingons. It's all these other like real Star Trek beats that I kind of like ingrained into the series and the franchise. So I'm only one episode in. The lead actress who's like the first officer is great. Like I really, really liked her performance and her character seems really interesting. They're taking it in a cool direction. The rest of the characters all seem a little weird, but who knows? I don't know. I don't know if this is supposed to be procedural either. You know, like there's all that history with like how it was created and whatnot, and I just don't know what to think of that yet. But first episode felt like a Star Trek episode. It felt like a weird blending of Next Generation and Enterprise, somewhere in between those two. It seems okay. I mean, I don't know if I'd recommend it to somebody like you who hasn't watched anything. But,
a muggle.
Yeah, but my wife sat and watched it. She's not a Star Trek fan. She had Wikipedia open the entire time, following along, trying to make heads or tails of everything, and she seemed to enjoy it okay. So
okay, there. So it is for Trekkies first.
I believe so. I think this is very much for the Trek fan first versus the Abrams films, which is trying to be just a popcorn film for everybody.
For everybody. I mean, you know, and hey, they're effective on that level.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, in terms of Chris rankings, Chris Pine is just number four for me. Like,
oof.
You know, you know, I definitely, I'm way more of an Evans guy.
I will agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we could have a whole segment on hashtag Chris Bowl, but that's another story. anyway, no, dude, I'm this is going to be one that I'm going to wait for it to come on Amazon Video and then maybe check out.
Sure.
But you know, Holly and I, this is my wife, have had long discussions about this whole upcoming stream war. For those of you who don't know, Disney's leaving Netflix next year and starting their own streaming service. So now CBS, Netflix, HBO, Stars, all of them have their own streaming service with their original content to get you there. And now it's just gone too full-blown. Now I'm hopping between services.
Yep.
And like now, I mean, we ditched HBO now that Game of Thrones is over. Now we're on Stars because Outlander's out. And then now we're going to hop. And, you know, you would think certain things would be true of each service, but they're not always. For example, Stars has unbelievable 4K support. HBO doesn't support it at all. To me, that makes no sense because HBO shoots in film. So why are you not updating your app for that? But whatever. And you also have more money than you could ever need. Whereas Stars is able to do it. And then, like, you know, you have these very real conversations. Like, once Disney leaves Netflix, what am I doing on Netflix? There's no Marvel. My kids don't watch anything that's not Disney. You know, we're probably just getting brainwashed. It's horrible. Don't worry, Cameron. I won't tell you anything about Outlander except this. Dude, get that soundtrack. It's on Amazon Prime Music or wherever. Just, or pull it up on YouTube next time you work out.
Yeah, pretty good.
I mean, yo, it's the same guy that does the Battlestar Galactica soundtracks.
Oh, okay. Then you had me there. Okay.
I mean, if you want your workout to sound like you are actually in Braveheart, then yeah, you should get it going, right?
Here's a deep cut. Will I go in one episode from Fat Apollo to Skinny Apollo?
Oh, yeah. Okay. For sure. You will set your bonbons down. Remember that? He's like, dude, it's the apocalypse.
Just hamming it up, yeah.
It's the apocalypse. How did you get sweets to get fat? But he managed it.
We should just have like a Battlestar Galactica rewatch cast, man. I mean, we need to go back.
The first two seasons are actually like the best show of all time. Like, it kind of falls apart, but the first two seasons are unbelievable. Anyway, I just played Destiny. I did buy, this is kind of tragic, but I picked up for sale Destiny or Divinity Original Sin. The sequel's out on PC, and I was like, oh, I'll play the first one. I never got around to it. I actually owned it at one point and traded it in. Kind of one of those that I never popped from the cellophane, or maybe I played like 10 minutes, and then I traded it in. Well, it was like on deep sale at GameStop for like 15, 18 bucks. Pick it up, and dude, it is a PC RPG. And to the point where I'm almost worried that I'm not going to be able to complete it on console because there's like a hot bar at the bottom and everything. But it's really, really roleplay-ish. Like, it makes you realize how disconnected things for like Skyrim and The Witcher have gotten from, I don't know if you ever played the Baldur's Gate games on PC, where it's like walls of text and you can talk to anybody and you can attack anybody and you can, you know. But I think it's something that you would not like because it demands too much from you in terms of commitment. I know how you are, Cameron.
Yeah. If it's not Persona, I'm not going to be giving it its full due.
No, dude, like, you're like, oh, yeah, Destiny is great. You don't write, you don't call, you don't text, nothing.
It's true. So, yeah.
And I know what's going on. You say, oh, I was at a wedding. I know you signed off and then played Persona some more, Cameron. Anyway.
No comment.
Mega short show today, but we're going to call it. Cameron, if someone would like to get a hold of you and really dig deep into the Star Trek, either the Kelvin timeline or the Amazon Prime timeline or whatever.
I mean, I have manuals. I have blueprints. We can go deep. At Cameron_McCoy.
Yeah, blueprints. How does the ship stay together? Are they built in space like that?
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, it's probably quantum. I don't know. That's a word.
Well, dude, with like those necks, like half the movies I see, the neck snaps and then, right?
Yeah. It's true. It's like a submarine. It's sealed.
It's like they need to solve that engineering problem. Okay, and I'm at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.
no frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.